this is Dr. Susan Kolb, and we're pleased today to interview Michael Cohen with his book, Future Medicine, on Temple of Health Radio Show. Mr. Cohen is Director of Legal Programs at the Division for Research and Education in Complementary and Integrative Medical Therapies, Harvard Medical School, and a 40th Anniversary Senior Fellow at the Center for the Study of World Religions, Harvard Divinity School. He has many books out. His website, which is globalvisionlegal.com, has some of his other books: Complementary Alternative Medicine, A Friend of All Faith, Beyond Complementary Medicine, Healing at the Borderland of Medicine and Religion, Legal Issues in Integrative Medicine, The Practice of Integrative Medicine, A Legal and Operational Guide, and A Question of Time. Well, Michael, you've been very busy writing all these books.
Sure, yes, indeed.
That's great. Well, you certainly have a unique perspective bringing together the world of spirituality and the legal world. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to be on this path?
Certainly. By the way, I'm back in private practice now as a lawyer, so... just to let you know.
Where are you located?
I'm actually physically located in Southern California right now.
Okay, super. Well, it's warm there. That's good.
It's warm and sunny, yes. I've got a better winter.
Is that where the fires are going on now, or is that somewhere else?
There have been some fires. It does get a little bit dry, but we also get some of those ocean views, so there's water as well.
Good.
So basically, back in when I was practicing law on Wall Street, I'd actually been studying transcendental meditation because I was doing some creative writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I initially had the thought that, closing my eyes and allowing myself to explore some of those unconscious spaces would be good for my creative writing opportunities. And what I realized is that there was a whole world to explore. So I started getting a bit more deeply into those spaces and studying different religions and holistic health. And around that time, alternative medicine was a term that was starting to be used more and more. And so I just decided to try to synthesize those interests with my professional interests. And I moved from practicing law at a large Wall Street firm to actually teaching and writing and starting to develop some ideas about how to bring these things together. And that's kind of where it all began.
Are you surprised, just in general, about how slow it's been for, spiritual medicine and holistic and integrative medicine to be accepted?
Well, it's been slow in some quarters and fast in others, or, at a better clip. I guess you're sort of asking, another way to frame what you're asking is, how long is it going to take
for
the world to shift? We all know it's coming. We all thought it was coming.
Yeah, it is.
Is it coming in 2012? Is it already here? Is it 2020?
Mm-hmm.
When are people going to start really waking up? When are we going to see a big difference? And, it's certainly a lot more acceptable in medicine to talk about, talk about spirituality and complementary practices. And, I certainly see a lot more support in the law than I did when I started writing.
Mm-hmm.
And you certainly see a lot more mainstream people. It's very common for people to go and get a massage or get different types of care, or, I put aromatherapy in my car and nobody thinks that's weird anymore. Some airlines even have it.
That's true. I was watching CNN the other night, and Hillary Clinton made a comment about that she wasn't about to start channeling her husband, which
that's
was
right.
really wild.
That's right.
Isn't that amazing?
It's gone mainstream, right?
I'm sorry?
When the Clintons do it, it's gone mainstream.
No kidding. But, Hillary does have some history of education in this area from some pretty remarkable healers who probably gave her some personal experience in terms of the energy body and some of the things. So she actually has had some education, but it's interesting for her to use that term. She was pretty annoyed that they would be asking what her husband thought, but it turned out to be a miscommunication with the translator, which was interesting.
I see. Well, good for her. You know, number one, that she has her own identity, and that's great.
Right,
and,
right.
Very clear about that. And number two, that she can use the word channeling.
I know. It's funny. Well, let me start with asking a little bit about the right to treat laws. Georgia has a right to treat law, and I guess I'm very lucky I practice in Georgia. These laws occurred because certain constituents, kind of lobbied, many with terminal cancer, and they lobbied at the state legislature level to get laws passed. And you want to comment on how important those laws are and where, I mean, do you know how many states might have a right to treat law? That a few years ago, about 10 years ago, it was about 7 or 8 states, but I don't know if more have passed them.
Yeah, a few more have passed. I mean, it's definitely well over a dozen at this point.
Okay.
Like New York and Oregon and Washington, Oklahoma, North Carolina are on the list.
Mm-hmm.
And basically another term for those, I think you're talking about what some people call medical freedom laws.
Right.
Which, excuse me, the idea of those laws is that they would give patients a right to treatment, but actually the way they work is they give docs the opportunity to integrate different, alternative, complementary, or emerging therapies into their practice. And they came out of a case that started in North Carolina where there was a physician named George Guess who was practicing homeopathy.
Mm-hmm.
And the board took away his license because they said that he was basically practicing beyond the usual standard of care.
Right.
And his argument was that he hadn't hurt any patients. There was no evidence of that. He'd only helped people, and he only used homeopathy as a last resort.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, I guess I got a little frog in there. I hope I'm not channeling Bill Clinton.
You're not
Bill trying to come through with a message for everybody. Just, go away, Bill. This is my time.
All right.
So basically, the court basically said, well, we can't really do anything because the statute at the time in North Carolina said that a physician can lose his or her license anytime he or she departs from the standard of care.
Mm-hmm.
And the standard of care was conventional. It did not include homeopathy. Therefore, the court threw up its hands and said, well, the board took away your license. Nothing we can do about it.
Mm-hmm.
So the voters came in and they got a law passed, which basically said that, a physician cannot lose a license simply for offering non-conventional or alternative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first medical freedom law of its kind. And it spread to over a dozen states in slightly different form. And the whole idea is just to give a physician the latitude to try other therapies, with the patient's consent, as long as they're not unreasonably dangerous or a lot more dangerous than conventional therapies. So that gives you more freedom, and that in turn gives the patient a wider array of choices.
Yeah, and I think it's very protective. The medical board here in Georgia is not particularly interested in going after doctors who are offering alternative, holistic, integrative therapies along with traditional therapies. Obviously we offer traditional therapies. I mean, I'm a surgeon, so if somebody comes to me with a breast nodule, I offer to biopsy it, or whatever is appropriate in terms of traditional medicine. If the patient says that they don't want to biopsy it, that they want to do something else, I can also make some recommendations.
Right.
But I usually tell them, it probably would be smart to biopsy it and find out what it is, because we don't even know what we're treating. But certainly, we are more likely to support the patient's desire to do other therapies if indeed those therapies have been useful in the past for treating the condition and are non-toxic or not dangerous. In Chapter 6, which I really like, Fraud, Ego, and the Abuse of Spiritual Power, you start out with Fraud, the unlicensed healer from Nazareth. That's great.
Yep.
So that we need to remember that there's a whole spiritual tradition in many different religions. It's not just Christianity.
Exactly. That was the point of that, little tongue in cheek, but it's just to say that the split that we've had between different forms of healing has gone on for a long time, and that there's a different historical tradition, and there's always been skepticism and prosecution and, you know, mm-hmm. openness on the other hand and different communities. And this is really just part of our history as humans. It's nothing new. It didn't just start in 1990 or, you know, with an article in the New England Journal of Medicine or something like
right.
that.
So, the United States was based on the principle of separation of church and state. And so the government was given the state, so to speak, those regulatory issues, and then the church or churches, or even you might argue the individual person, if they're an atheist, was given the realm of spirituality and those types of things. Do you see this separation as maybe one of the major problems we have when it comes to asking our court system and government to step in to regulate or somehow even comment on spiritual medical practices?
Well, I don't see it so much as about the separation of church and state problem. I think it's more about, because that really has more to do with freedom of religious expression on the one hand, and on the other hand, not allowing the government to dictate religious preferences. So that's sort of a related but separate area of law. But I think where it ties in is just the fact that things in the spiritual realm are so subjective and personal, mm-hmm. and often involve a kind of a personal mystical experience. Whereas, our trend in medicine has been toward trying to be objective, and the idea that it's scientific, meaning that we can have a consensus about what's involved. So, it's much harder to reach in and get consensus around things that are more in a private domain, because we all have different perspectives, and I guess that's why we have different religious perspectives. But tying it back into the legal end, I think what we're dealing with is really more the 10th Amendment than the First. The First Amendment has to do with freedom of religion, and the 10th Amendment has to do with the government's ability to regulate health, welfare, safety, and morals.
Mm-hmm.
And we also call that the police power. So, a lot of the laws that have been passed, such as laws licensing physicians, all of the laws licensing healthcare providers, laws licensing massage establishments versus massage therapy, for example,
mm-hmm.
that all comes under health, safety, welfare, and morals. So, if there's a clash between somebody asserting a right to choose whatever form of healing they want versus the right of the state to regulate how practitioners are licensed and what they can and can't do and what the limits are, the latter is going to trump. The 10th Amendment mm-hmm. is going to triumph every time. And that's just what the courts have consistently held, because of this belief that there's something really, really unique about medicine and really unique about the ability to treat the body, and that somehow, we want to regulate and protect, the way that people's physical health is handled.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't think that there's been a lot of creative thinking about, well, that's fine, if we have a totally physical, biochemical, atomic Newtonian mm-hmm. model of the world. But what about when you get into quantum physics and, the Tao of physics, and
right.
what if human beings are more than a physical body? What if there's something called an energy body? And you can sort of measure, things that happen to the energy body, but you can't quite tell if there is one. And some people say it's yellow, and some people say it's blue, and some people say there's seven mm-hmm. chakras. And
yeah.
that's an Indian term anyway. It's maybe
yeah.
a term from Sanskrit. And, how do we deal with all that? I mean, that's a...
Well, there have been some technologies. So Valerie Hunt developed some equipment that could measure the auric body, and even if somebody had pain in their shoulder, could quantitate how much pain by how much red frequency was around the shoulder. So there actually have been some things developed, and Norm Shealy, as you know, has developed all sorts of things, measuring gigahertz energy coming out of the healer's hands and, all sorts of energetic biophysical devices that treat depression and all sorts of physical problems. I think the main problem is like the paradigm shift. As a spiritual healer who just happens to be a plastic surgeon, I know very well that spiritual issues are actually primary in disease. The mental and emotional disruptions are causative in a lot more diseases than have strict physical causes. And even if there's an accident, there's usually a spiritual reason behind that. So If you understand the whole thing and you practice with the whole thing, it would almost be malpractice not to consider the higher bodies, because if you don't, then every time, I mean, if you don't treat the cause, say the cause resides at the higher level, say the person has a curse or something like that, and they keep getting injured. This is the fifth time they've been injured, and yet no doctor or practitioner has recognized that they have a curse on them. You know, so you actually aren't treating the cause of the problem, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think
There's all sorts of things, and you address this in your book, that with Larry Dossey, who provided all sorts of evidence-based medicine for the power of prayer, and he says, could it be malpractice with all of this evidence not to pray for the patient? You know,
that's my point.
You know, those of us who are on, as we say, bleeding on the cutting edge, see. If you don't pay attention to these realms, then you really haven't treated the cause, and the patient will continue to go downhill and just develop other problems. Cancers come back, second heart attacks, you know, just or continued problems in the area of the chakra that's disrupted. If you can do something to help the patient keep that chakra healthy, then that patient might be able to, you know, do much better. And also, the cost of healthcare. My goodness, the cost of healthcare. What you're saying in spiritual medicine is so cheap, it's so inexpensive, it's so easy compared to putting somebody through a coronary artery bypass or a, you know, surgery for a brain tumor. Just prevent the problem, you know, understand what's causing the brain tumor and prevent the problem on a societal level. And we're not doing any of those things.
Right. Well, we're not doing a lot of it, and we're certainly not incorporating it as a matter of public policy, because I think people are still trying to get around their hands around these sort of huge, as you said, paradigm shift philosophical issues, you know, such as what are we? You know, are we more than the body?
Are we spiritual beings having a physical experience, or the other way around?
Exactly. Am I a man dreaming on a butterfly, or a butterfly dreaming on a man? You know,
right. Well, that's very true. In your book, you mention the ascending hierarchy of regulatory needs. And of course, the first one is just preventing fraud and that type of thing. Would you mind commenting on how we need to be looking at regulation rather than just preventing fraud and protecting people against every doctor who has a belief system, or every practitioner who has a belief system slightly different that is trying to defraud the patient and get their money?
Sure. I sort of took that idea from Abraham Maslow's hierarchy of needs.
Mm-hmm.
And he basically, as you probably know, he says that we, you know, tend to move up the ladder from our most basic physical needs like food and shelter to higher order needs like the need for belonging and acceptance in mm-hmm. the community and things like the capacity for love.
Right.
And then we also move up to self-actualization or kind of a personal transcendence, or mm-hmm. you know, what Carl Jung called individuation. So I kind of borrowed this concept and thought, well, you know, let's look at the whole healthcare policy debate that's going on, you know, that's raging now and has gone on for a long time, and let's just see where that's pitched if we take this idea that we have similarly have sort of a hierarchy of values of regulation and law and policy. And a lot of the debate, at least around complementary medicine, integrative medicine, you know, you could see it historically as being pitched around sort of fear or the lowest level of survival.
Right. You know, everybody's out to get you.
Everybody's out to get you. Everybody's out to make money. There's a conflict mm-hmm. between the insurance company and the doctor.
Right.
You don't know what the best care is. People are, you know,
inherently bad.
People are inherently bad. They're out to rip you off and
use
some elixir or nostrum and out of a bottle or potion.
Right.
And
only the government can protect you from them.
And only the government can protect you, yes, which is actually not a conspiracy theory idea. It's in medical
ethics. It's the opposite.
Yes, it's the opposite. We call it paternalism. You know, the government
paternalism.
They want to make all your decisions.
Right.
So, you know, and on the opposite side of that is something called autonomy or consumer choice, that people have a right. You know, there's some powerful legal and ethical principles that say a person has a right to say what will be done with mm-hmm. his or her own body. Yeah. Earn the right to make choices. So, you know, what would happen if we stopped seeing the world in a total black and white, fear-based way and said, yes, mm-hmm. but humans also have a capacity not only for, you know, emergency care and acute care, which is very mm-hmm. important, using the biological, the physical, you know, you want the sutures when they're needed, but also, you know, there's a capacity for transcendence and individuation and even on a collective level, you know, something like an enlightened society.
Mm-hmm.
And so how would that translate into regulation if we looked at the world that way? I mean, at the very least, it might mean that we kind of shake off this idea, as you said, this sort of Maslow said that if a society that only looks at the lowest level mm-hmm. of human needs is sick and neurotic.
Right, yeah.
And that to truly be healthy, we have to look at the whole range, including our capacity for love and transcendence. And, you know, maybe, just maybe looking at things that way would accommodate a view of the world that includes things that you were talking about earlier, like what is the root cause of disease?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we say that a shaman can blow away illness, I mean, maybe there's a level of reality to that that we can just start to think about or incorporate or try to understand or, you know, put West and East together or understand what integration means at a really deep level. And, you know, that's really a journey. It's not just a mm-hmm. journey of public policy. It's also a journey of conversation and sort of everybody working together to see what the world would look like if we made a shift, whatever that is. So.
Yeah, well, that's kind of my passion. I have a book. I'm looking at it right now. It's called Spontaneous Remission, put out by Noetic Science. And I've interviewed at least 30 physicists and other leaders in consciousness research on exactly what is a spontaneous remission. I've witnessed spontaneous remissions. I've been a part of spontaneous remissions. And I've actually lectured other scientists on spontaneous remissions. I think we have a duty to study this. I mean, good Lord, why would you just dismiss within 5 minutes metastatic cancer disappearing from the body? Why would you just dismiss that? Why wouldn't you go look into it, see what the physics is behind it, see if it's reproducible, see what, you know, thought forms need to be released by the patient in order for that to occur, and understand how shamans also are able to facilitate spontaneous remissions of cancer? You know, I think all of that's critical because look at our cancer rate and look at the piss poor, I guess, rates we have for curing with our, we haven't gotten better with chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery. I mean, those numbers are flat. We need something much better because we've created an environment that's really increasing the rate of cancer formation.
We definitely need to include in our understanding of cancer in the world, you know, the role of environment as well as consciousness. And I think
we do.
You know,
they both are important. I've been interviewing geneticists on epigenetics and other scientists on epigenetics, and it's clear from the scientific evidence coming forth that it is not the genes that determine what happens so much as the environment. And the genes shift, you know, become dominant or recessive or silent based on the environment. That's the beauty of having us adapt to whatever environment's thrown at us. You know, that's the intelligence behind the DNA. I wanted to read one line in this book that I just love as a kind of a capstone for this discussion. If Jesus were to appear in the United States today, he would not be crucified. He would most likely be prosecuted under a variety of healthcare licensing laws and sued. In short, the second coming would be accompanied by a spate of court filings. That's brilliant. And so true.
He'd need a good defense lawyer.
You know, he'd have to call you because I don't know any other attorney that could defend him.
Well, that's kind of you. I'd probably say no comment on that one. But
yeah, I know. But it's that's so true because he would be violating this is not just you being cute and this is actually true legally.
Yeah, I think the idea is that anybody who comes in with the problem is particularly acute for non-licensed healers. So I
guess right, exactly.
Clients from people who want to offer services who are not physicians, you know, who are practicing nutrition or homeopathy or naturopathy or some, you know, theory of healthcare without any kind
mm-hmm.
of licensure. And if there's no legal umbrella for them, they're at risk of prosecution for unlicensed practice of medicine.
Yeah, and Georgia, I don't know about other states, but Georgia almost every year has these laws coming up that are they're trying to get through where they're trying to make certain things just illegal, you know, frankly illegal.
Well, they're illegal sort of by default simply because of the way that the structure was set up in the late 19th mm-hmm. century with the growth of the AMA and what we now call conventional, or some people call it allopathic medicine,
mm-hmm.
which is that everything else was pushed under, and so other people, really starting with chiropractic and naturopathy in the early 1900s, had to, and then later acupuncture and the massage therapy, sort of had to fight for licensure and mm-hmm. get a carve-out with a more specific scope of practice.
Right.
And if you don't have that, then really there's no legal umbrella, or even if there is one, there's also the risk of prosecution for unlicensed medical practice, and medicine is defined in the law very broadly. It includes diagnosis and treatment, which, again, if you just look at those words in the broadest context, they can include a lot of things. You know, if
right.
you go to
almost
someone
everything.
And say chicken soup.
Right, right. That's true. The FDA went after Cheerios for claiming to lower cholesterol, you know.
Right.
One of my guests a few years ago, about eight to ten years ago, was the head of the Spiritual Healers Organization in England. And you mentioned in your book, and I just wanted to, for our listening audience, contrast what Britain has compared to the U.S. Britain has a federation of spiritual healers that require certain licensing requirements and educational requirements, and also testimonials from patients who actually had benefit. And they also are able to go into many of the hospitals and charge for healings, and or I guess they have a socialized system over there, be paid for healings, and other very interesting integration of spiritual healing into a socialized medical system. And I just wonder, since socialized medical systems are quite sensitive to cost, you know, because after all, if you can really lower cost, this is of great benefit. I wonder if we go more in that direction, if some of these non-traditional therapies will be incorporated because they work so well and they're so cheap.
I think more and more we're recognizing how much responsibility every person has for their own prevention and maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think people are also taking more responsibility themselves, and more people are taking supplements or exercising or, you know, doing relaxation practices, and docs are freer to recommend them than they were in the past. But, I think part of the problem also, on the other hand, is our obsession with measuring everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know it's important in order to get things reimbursed or to get the government behind them, but at the same point, you know, you're talking about things, some things can be measured. I mean, certain, you know, as you know better than I, some outcomes can be measured.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what happens in between, it's like, where do I go when I close my eyes? You know, what do we mean when we say going inside? I mean, what are those
mm-hmm.
spaces? And how do we understand them? Can we measure them? Do we really want to measure them? Do we really want to, you know, assign a little space in a chart or table?
Mm-hmm.
Or I guess, you know, you could code, bill and code a healing session. But
you can do it by time. Yeah.
You do for your time, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's the only way healers really been charging in the U.S. anyway. So,
I mean, there's sort of pros and cons. I co-authored an article a couple years ago that was published in a mainstream medical journal, the Annals mm-hmm. of Internal Medicine, where we wrote about credentialing and how do you credential
mm-hmm.
Complementary medicine providers, all the way from those that are the easiest to those that are the most difficult. And, you know, we talked about the benefits of that because obviously it opens up the whole world of healthcare to, you know, non-allied health providers, non-conventional providers.
Mm-hmm.
Because then once hospitals know how to credential people, then they can fit them more easily into the system, and then that gives patients access to different kinds of care. So on one level, it's a good thing. Mm-hmm. But we also pointed out that there's also a dark side to the Force, which is that as you make things more conventional and mm-hmm. slot the non-conventional into the conventional boxes, you know, do you lose some of the spontaneity and freedom and some of the more open spaces of consciousness, mm-hmm. you know, that can really make a powerful impact but can't necessarily be always measured, quantified, you know, made to make sense on a cost level or, you know, put into a medical chart in a way that has the usual meaning. So there's a bit of a tension there, just to point that out. And I think that's part of the exploration in my book, Future Medicine, also, which is to just throw open the question of where we're really going with all this and where we want to go. You know, we don't want to recreate the same old paradigm using mm-hmm. new tools. We want to create a different kind of world. And how do we do that?
I think one of the things that I think is probably going to happen fairly shortly, maybe within the next 20 years, one of the main problems we have is the disparity of energy amongst the players. It's you put it very nicely in your Hawaiian shaman story, where you describe this beautiful ceremony where the shaman's doing all these things and all the things that are going on spiritually, and then the regulator is back there playing solitaire on his laptop, you know, totally oblivious to everything. So we have this big disparity of energy, of knowledge, of experience, and also of just ability to understand, because if you can't experience something, you're going to say it doesn't exist. I mean, within your perceptual reality. So if we are headed towards something, you know, that may occur around 2012 or maybe even a little later, if we are headed for something that's going to bring us together more so we're in a less wide energetic range, I think that that will help. I think that that will really help, because then we have more physicians, attorneys, judges, politicians, leaders of society that are on the same page, and that always helps.
Yeah, it definitely helps. I mean, this is really how chiropractic became licensed, is that, you know, in the old days, if you were a good chiropractor back in the 20s, mm-hmm. you would get thrown in jail for practicing medicine without a license. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, once behind bars, which really proved your, you know, your stripes, you would then offer to do free sessions on the guy who held the keys, and then, you know, the warden.
Right. Work on up.
And eventually, you know, people thought it was a good thing, and the lobbying eventually succeeded.
Yeah.
In fact,
wild.
That was a slogan for the profession. It was, go to jail for chiropractic.
That's great. Go to jail for chiropractic. Oh,
not
so
that
I'm
not recommending that to
No.
You know, kids, don't try this at home.
No, don't do that. Well, you know, I think that we are, you know, possibly within the next 10 years going to see some changes. Of course, there will need to be attention to credentialing. I mentioned to you earlier when we were talking privately about talk about a spiritually based hospital, and of course, people will need to be credentialed for that to practice within the hospital. I've actually given a lot of thought to that, though, and like I said, been introduced to a number of leaders around the world who have something to say about that, and because they've done it, like the Federation of Spiritual Healers, and so there are ways to do that, and intelligent ways, and ways that don't exclude the people who are very talented, because of course you really want to recruit the people who are very talented to your organization.
You know, there are a lot of if people are interested, I'll just put a mention here of the Complementary and Alternative Medicine Law blog, which I publish at CAMLAWBLOG.com. Mm-hmm. And through that website, you can find many links to different resources. For example, there's an academic consortium for integrative medicine, which has a number of, you know, high-level medical schools and their deans that have bought into the idea of mm-hmm. researching and continuing to develop educational curricula for complementary integrative medicine. You've got some very high-level folks working on that. You've got the Institute of Medicine has a report on complementary and alternative medicine and its use in the United States. And
mm-hmm.
I was a consultant for that committee, and you can find that report is very interesting because it goes into detail about many of the issues that you mentioned as to how to integrate these different models, you know, what level of evidence is necessary, and
mm-hmm.
how do we look at the scientific evidence, and how do we look at the legal and ethical issues, and implement credentialing schemes. And also in the blog, I talk about other centers and different models of integrative care and how people are putting it together operationally, administratively, and really making it work. So, you know, even though I've talked about, we've talked on the show about how we've got to transcend and move beyond fear and look at the different paradigms, mm-hmm. I mean, I think also those are all very, very real issues on one level. And yet on another level, you know, things are just moving forward and developing, and there are a lot of resources out there for people who might be listening who want to put together an integrative care or wellness clinic and just want to see some of the tools that are and some models from people who've already been there and have done it themselves.
I had the president of the American Holistic Health Association ask me to write a kind of a paper on how I developed my center, and it's up on their site as well as on our site. It's called the 21st Century Medicine, the Integrated Medical Center. And just kind of, we are the only center that integrates medicine, surgery, and then the whole host of holistic and alternative therapies, mainly because I'm a surgeon, and I think that's, you know, fairly unusual in terms of having a spiritual healer and a surgeon in one person.
Hmm.
But I was guided to go into plastic surgery specifically. You know, those voices that you get deemed schizophrenic for. I've always had guidance like that, and I was specifically guided into plastic surgery. So I sort of tell people I'm a spiritual healer that was just guided to become a plastic surgeon. And it there was reasons for that. This whole breast implant fiasco.
Mm-hmm.
I'm at the center of that controversy. And, you know, basically anywhere where there's been a mess, there's been a doctor placed who actually had the disease that is the leader in that area. Mm-hmm. So we have, you know, a whole host of people in all the different areas where there's a, you know, a real problem in terms of the disease not wanting to be recognized by the powers that be. And
well,
so I think
a lot of courage to be out there on the front lines, you know, doing what you're doing, and just to be authentically who we are and realize that we can be multidimensional people, really.
Yeah, well, you are similarly guided to do what you do because you have a unique perspective and knowledge of the law that, you know, non-attorneys don't have. And so you're a help to, you know, people who are trying to push forward. And, you know, I for one am very happy that you've done such a large body of work. I think it's very helpful, especially as we go on to, you know, to develop more institutionalized care. Because, as you know, people are much more likely to sue institutions than they are individuals. You know, it's a risk.
Once the big institutions work it out, then it becomes easier
for everybody.
Yeah, right. I mean, once you see, you know, Harvard Medical School and Stanford and Duke and
right.
George Washington and Columbia, you know, and on and on and on, and they're studying
mm-hmm.
botanicals, and they're, you know, they have and you know, MD Anderson Cancer Center, and
right.
You know, they have classes in, I mean, I don't know if this is what the current schedule is, but they've offered, you know, things like Tai Chi and yoga
mm-hmm.
and meditation, and, you know, so this stuff is really definitely out there.
Yeah, I taught intuitive diagnosis and dowsing. I was using to show the medical students at Emory dowsing as a way to start developing your intuition. Because, of mm-hmm. course, with a dowsing rod, you get a yes or a no, and then eventually you get just more information. You know, if you practice that long enough, then you go into actually you don't have to use the rods because you hear or feel yes or no, and then additional information comes in. So. And it was interesting. Many of the medical students were highly intuitive, extremely
mm-hmm.
intuitive. and quite good at this. And thank goodness they're going into medicine, because medicine needs intuitive doctors. It's Einstein said the only really valuable thing is intuition, and I think that's really
right.
True.
You know? Yeah, I don't know why it's been so hard to embrace that side of ourselves. I mean, I really don't know why we're such a linear left-brain society here in the States overall. You know, it should be the most natural thing in the world. I mean, when you're a kid, you use the right side of your brain and all those cells, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we have imaginary playmates, and, you know, we're extremely creative, and everything is fun and
mm-hmm.
full of joy, and, you know, and these things are just, you know, kids just accept this, these other realities, you know, very naturally, and then somehow, you know, you get older, and it's like do laundry, you know, file taxes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, navigate through traffic, you know. Take anger management courses
yeah.
to, you know, when people tailgate too much, and
right.
it gets really serious.
Yeah, it does.
You know, whatever happens is going inside and being intuitive and having fun.
Yeah, I visited my roommate in medical school. I visited her, and she had two kids, and one of them was about three. And he comes up to me, and he says, "I remember you. You were with Mommy when I was with God."
There
you go, oh my God. And I looked at my former roommate, and she says, "He does that all the time." You know, like, we don't know where
right.
it comes from.
I've read that before, yeah.
Isn't that wonderful?
Last time I was the mommy and you were the daughter.
Exactly, exactly. The kids coming in now are quite evolved, shall we say.
Yep,
and hopefully, you know, we're smart enough not to squash that with, "Oh no, dear, that's not true. That's not," you know, the squashing of the spiritual sight and the experience. Remembering the experience of before you actually were crammed into this body.
I just think the world is getting smarter, so I'm just always prepared that the next wave of people coming in is going to be.
I think it will. I think there'll come a time in the next 50 years or so where criminals simply can't come in, or people who would vibrate at that level just simply can't get in. And that's really how we're going to get this 1,000 years of peace, if you think about it. It's going to be a vibrational thing. It's got to be a vibrational thing. I mean, you can't kill off all the people who are lower vibration. That's an oxymoron.
Right, right.
I wanted to also mention, there was a newspaper article in France. This was hilarious. This kid was born and witnessed by multiple people. The kid came out and said, as clear as could be, "Oh, no, not again." And then it didn't say anything else after that until, you know, it was normally developed and could
wow.
speak. But I know.
That's better than pass the salt or something like that.
No, don't do this. I don't want to be born here again. Probably was, you know, the last lifetime was in the Inquisition or something.
Like, yeah.
Not sure it's safer now.
I guess that person's got some work to do.
Yeah, really, really. Well, do you want to give a little bit of information about your website?
Sure.
And any contact
sure.
information?
Sure. You can contact me. Thanks for asking. You can contact me by going to globalvisionlegal.com. Globalvisionlegal.com. Just how
okay.
it's spelled.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my website, and all my contact information is there. And if you're interested in resources on complementary and alternative medicine legal issues and spirituality, you can go to the Complementary Alternative Medicine Law blog, which is www.camlawblog.com, so either CAM Law Blog or globalvisionlegal.com, and that's the best way to get a hold of me. And there are also a host of articles and some interesting books and podcasts. There's even a video and some other interesting things, so please feel free, and it's there for everyone to take a look at.
And what is the nature of your private practice right now? What's the things you're doing most of?
Mostly I'm representing practitioners and
mm-hmm.
Clinics, medical spas.
Mm-hmm.
I also just do general business law, because a lot of the healthcare problems, a lot of the healthcare clients, you know, need general business advice. I mean, there could be licensing issues. There could be
mm-hmm.
sort of crossover things, like, for example, people who have new dietary supplements, and then they want
mm-hmm.
to have the correct labeling through the FDA, but also, you know, license and distribute their products worldwide or market them.
Mm-hmm.
People with new medical devices that are using new technologies, or, you know, maybe using crystals or some kind of vibrational technology.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the kind of people that come also. Both, and the practitioners are both licensed and unlicensed, and basically they come from all over the country, and I've also had people internationally, people setting up schools or people that want to get their products into the U.S. or just figure out how things work here so they can, you know, create their own models. So that's those are some of the folks that come. And it's just extremely diverse. It's basically, you know, translating everything that I learned and put into my books and was able to do institutionally and academically into a setting where I can help people who have a business idea and want to put something together, you know, in the world.
Does California have a right to treat law or equivalent to that? Or is that
California has something where it allows, it's actually sort of a variation. It does have some of that language, basically allowing docs a little bit more leeway. And there's also language for non-licensed healers, giving them a bit of umbrella of protection, basically saying that they can offer services so long as they disclose their theory and training to the patient, so they give a kind of an informed consent. Don't commit fraud, which is a little bit circular, but it's basically saying you can have a carve-out if you do something very limited, but you don't take responsibility for the person's medical welfare, and you just make sure that that they go and see a physician, you know, when they need to, but you could still, I guess, do hypnosis or you know, some other kind of care. So there's a bit of a carve out for that, but it's not really clear how that's going to work in practice because at the same point you've still got this prohibition on the unlicensed practice of medicine. So you know, one of the things that I'll do for people is we'll draft a consent form and, for example, a disclaimer for their website, and give them a couple of hours advice to help them structure their practice so that they know where the bright lines are, where they can't run afoul of it.
Right.
So just to give an example, I have a client who's a healer, and he's about to get very well known and get on the radio and TV nationally. And, you know, he's constantly getting requests for psychic information, and it's everything from relationship advice to where they should live to, you know, general general information about taking care of themselves, but then when it gets into what they should do in terms of their prescription medication or a disease condition, you know, he's very careful not to cross the line.
That's true. That's good advice.
And people don't always know. It's better to get a little bit of guidance than to,
to deal with a lawsuit.
lawsuit or a criminal investigation from from the state or an investigation from one's own medical board or other regulatory board.
Right. Well, we're coming up at the end of our hour here. We've been interviewing Michael Cohen, a very prolific attorney with a great deal of knowledge in the legal advice and business advice on healthcare law involving alternative and complementary medicine, holistic medicine. His book, Future Medicine, is a wealth of information, and he has many other books as well. Thank you very much for joining us, Michael. We appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great. I wanted to also talk about some of the other programs we have. Next week on the 22nd, we will be interviewing Dr. Christian DeQuincy on his book, Deep Spirit, Cracking the Noetic Code. We talked with Dr. DeQuincy before on his book, Consciousness, Zombies to Angels, which is one of the most thorough investigations of consciousness that I've ever read, and I've read most of them. And then we're interviewing Laura Alden Cam, who might actually benefit from talking to you, Michael. She is an intuitive diagnostician who is just remarkable. We're interviewing her on her book, Intuitive Wellness, Using Your Body's Inner Wisdom to Heal. And then on, let's see, the 5th of September, we're interviewing Dr. John Lerma, Learning from the Light, Pre-Death Experiences, Prophecies, Angelic Messages of Hope. On the 20th of August, we have our Noetic Science meeting. It's at 7:30 at the Dunwoody office. Kimberl Rayfield, who's our licensed acupuncturist, will be giving a lecture on Chinese medicine for stress reduction. And then I am going to be giving the Noetic Science meeting on the 17th of September, talking about breast implants, cell phones, GMO foods, nanotechnology, and other things that our government is not interested in regulating. Anyway, thank you very much for joining us. This has been Temple of Health Radio Show, and we will see you next week.
So you had plastic surgery. What was it like?
It was great. Don't get me wrong, it was surgery, but the doctors and staff at Plasticos were terrific.
Honey, you look like $1 million. You actually went to Plasticos and had it done.
Why don't you? Plastic surgery is outpatient, and you'll only be out of work a few days. I love what Plasticos did for me, and looking my best is an investment that pays in so many ways. The help you get from the professionals at Plasticos is a bargain.
Plasticos, 770-457-4677. Mention this ad for a free consultation. Financing is available, 770-457-4677.
Please join us every Saturday morning for Temple of Health Radio Show, brought to you by Plasticos and Millennium Healthcare. Our holistic medical practices in Atlanta are committed to community education. Our shows bring you national authors on topics of health alternatives, new scientific breakthroughs, and spiritual medicine.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.